Every label of our states corresponds to a different physical state. Okay? So as you remember, in our example yesterday, to every label X, there was state X, cat X. But then, for instance, in this case, by compactifying the space, then we identify some states in this way. And this is the gauge structure. Right? So now we want to do the same. So you see, we start with a larger Hilbert space, and then we define the so-called gauge invariant Hilbert space or physical Hilbert space, because the physical Hilbert space is the space in which these states are the same state. Okay. So, and we do it on a lattice. So we start with a square lattice with periodic boundary conditions. Okay. So let me go ahead. And so there are periodic boundary conditions, right? So I am identifying this aside, this aside, and this aside, this aside, and so on. So if you want a 3D drawing of this, you know that this would be a torus. And the way this lattice wraps around the torus is something like this. Okay, now we place, okay, some stuff about this lattice. So this will be a L by L lattice. So the number of sides, N, number of sides, is obviously L squared. And what is the number of links?
To win.
Yes. And then we are also interested in the number of these platets, but you see that they are in one-to-one correspondence with the sides. I mean, for every side, there is only one platet. So the number of platets is also n, which is n squared. And our total Hilbert space, so the non-physical Hilbert space, is obtained in this way. We place a spin 1/2 on the edges of this lattice. Okay? So our total Hilbert space, H star, is C2, is the Hilbert space of one spin, times all the spins that we have, that are 2L squared. So I would say tensor 2L squared. Very good. And now we need to define a gauge structure. Right? So we need to define a transformation on this space. So let me call this transformation G. And this will be a local transformation, Gn. So by n, I label the sides of the lattice. Okay. So Gn of psi will be some psi prime. So psi and psi prime are both in H top. And they are different states, right? Just like on the line, cat x and cat x plus y or plus a are two different states. But now, how do we define our gauge invariant Hilbert space? Well, exactly as we did before, this will be the set of states that are originally in H top, but not all of them, only those such gn psi is equal to psi. Correct me. So these states are the same state. This state, psi prime and psi are the same state. We identify them. So of course, not all the states in here have this property. Okay, now let's define what is Gn. So Gn is defined in this way. Sometimes I will call it the star operator. So let me do a picture. This is the site N. And these are all the edges that come out from this side. And I will apply the sigma x operator on all these bonds. Remember that the spins live on the bonds. And the notation that we will use is this. This is the product of sigma x on all the bonds that belong to the site N. Okay? So let's consider some states in H top that are not gauging value. Most states in H top are not gauging value. For instance, spin configurations. What is a spin configuration? It's a state in the computational basis or in the sigma z basis, right? So for instance, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, something like this. Sometimes we call, we have used this notation if you remember. We choose a configuration of eigenvalues of sigma z, and it is the tensor product of all these eigenvalues, of all the eigenstates corresponding to those eigenvalues. Well, we see immediately that if I apply Gn to some spin configuration, well, what I will do is that, so again, this is a local operator, right? So what I mean is that it is sigma x on these four spins and identity everywhere else. Well, so wherever the identity, nothing changes. But then wherever, so let me write, it will be still this for I that does not belong to N. But then, for the I that belongs to N, when wherever 0, it becomes 1, and so I am getting the opposite eigenvalue. And this state is obviously not this state. I've changed my spin configuration. So these states are not states in here. So wherever there are states in here, this is not empty. In fact, we would like to understand how many states we have. What is the dimension of this Hilbert space? So obviously the dimension of H top is 2 to the 2L squared. Right? And we want to understand what is the dimension of H gauge.
That question, like, I'm a bit confused about the notation here. So you wrote N in the figure of those star as a point on the lattice, like N.
It's a site.
Yeah, the site is labeled as N. Like, but in your equation, you say it, the G of N is equal to product of sigma J over X, and J belongs to N. So
yeah, but this notation means these are all the links that belong to this site. It's a notation.
Yeah.
These are all the links that insists on this society.
Then another confusion I have is you act that G of N onto the state cat, like cat curly brackets sigma I of Z.
Yeah.
And if the operators are living under link, like how can it act on a state? Like I thought that those states are living on each side, isn't it? Like 0, 1, 1, 0 stuff.
The spins live on the bonds.
Oh.
So the spins live here. So the operators act here. And I call G of N, the operator that acts on this, the four links that come out from N. That's why it's a function of N, not because it acts on N. Because N labels which four spins you to choose. Okay. So we want to understand this, okay? Now we would like to understand what is the dimension. We need to understand how we can obtain this space. Okay. So you see, this is our total Hilbert space. And this is some subspace of the states such that Gn psi is equal to psi. Okay. So being a subspace, there must be the projector into the subspace. So let's try to understand what is the projector onto. So basically what I'm saying is that H gauge is some projector operator operating on H. And we want to understand what is P. Okay, so let's do it in a simple case. So imagine that I don't want to find the global manifold which for every n this is true. Okay. Let me fix one n. So I will call pi n, pn, the projector onto the subspace such that gn psi super psi for a given n. So it's just one, these states are all invariant for one particular gauge transformation. So can we guess what is the projector onto this subspace? So the trick is that, as you can see, g square is again g. G square is 1. Right? G square is 1. This means that this guy, 1 plus g n over 2, must be a projector. And let's see if it's the right project. So let's compute the square of this. And this is obviously 1 over 4, here the identity, plus 2gn, plus gn squared, which is the identity, right? And this is again pn. So this thing is a project. And it is projecting your state on the eigenstate of eigenvalue plus 1 of Gn. Let's prove it. So let me define psi prime. What I obtain if I take any psi and I project it with my I. Okay. Now I want to see what is the eigenvalue of this, if this is an eigenstate of Gn. So I just apply Gn on the psi prime. So I have Gn 1 plus Gn psi over 2 psi. Okay? And then you see that this Gn on this is again 1 plus Gn over 2. So this is again big psi. You see? Which is again by definition psi prime. So Gn psi prime is equal to psi prime. So psi prime is eigenvector of Gn over eigenvector plus 1. So no matter what is psi, once I project it, I obtain an eigenvector of Gn of eigenvector plus 1. Henceforth, this is the projector onto that subspace. Okay, but we want the global projector. So now you can see that for two different ends, these different projectors commit. That's very easy to see because they only contain the identity and sigma x. They can only commute with each other. So, if I first project onto, it doesn't matter the order in which I operate with them, I can define P as the product over N of all the Pn, and this will project me onto this subspace. So this is the product of 1 plus Gn over. Also mind that after projection, we don't get normalized states. Because projection does not preserve normalization, which means that after the projection, we need to normalize the states. The normalization is just normalization. Okay. So, now that we know the subspace, how many projectors do we have? How many projections that we need? It seems that we've made L squared, right? Because they're related by N. However, not all the projections are independent. Why? Because of the periodic boundary conditions. If you take the product over n of all the gn's. So what happens? Let's try. So I'm first flipping these pins, right? Starting from this side. Then I do the product of this times this. So I flip these pins and I flip this back. So you see the interior cancels. Now I do this here. I flip this. Well, again the interior cancels. And then I operate here, I flip this, and this interior cancels. So as you can see, after operating on four sides, I have flipped all the spins on the boundary, but all those inside, they are not flipped. So now imagine that I keep doing that, so I do a bubble that's bigger and bigger, and only the spins on the boundary are flipped. But in the end, I reach the periodic boundary conditions, everything closes, there is no boundary, so nothing is flipped. So the product of all of them is the identity. In other words, once I have decided that all these states have eigenvalue plus 1, for L squared minus 1 of these operators, then the last one is determined. Must be plus 1. Right? Because the product must be 1. So there are only L squared minus 1 independent projections. Once I've flipped on the subspace where L squared minus 1 of these constraints are satisfied, the last one is automatically satisfied. So the dimension of the H gauge is equal to 2 L squared is the initial number of spins, minus the number of the constraints, the number of the projection. Because every time we do a projection, we ask the sides of the interfaces. Because G of n has two eigenvalues, plus one and minus one. And we choose always the eigenvalue plus one. So we are half in the dimension of the interface. Good. So minus the number of the constraints. So it's two, the 2L squared, minus L squared minus one. Which is 2 to the L squared plus 1. So this is the dimension of HPH.
So would you please elaborate once more, like how did you count the number of constraints? Like I understand the problem.
These are the constraints.
But where does this number come from?
What?
Like which equation did you write down the like what
H gauge is P H top.
Yes.
And P is the product of L squared minus one independent operators. So I am every projection asks the dimension of the interface because we choose one eigenvalue out of two. And let me put it in this way. You can see it also in this way. In the original Hilbert space, okay, I'll show you in another way. In the original Hilbert space, we said that this is C to the tensor well squared, right? But instead of using the spins as quantum numbers, I can use any set of commuting operators that are independent, right? I'm changing quantum numbers. And in this space, these operators are commuting. There are L squared minus one of them. So these are L squared minus one quantum numbers. And there are other other operators to finish a basis. Let me call them chi, I, and there are L squared plus one of them. Okay? We don't need to know who they are. But this is a new basis. Okay? Made of these two L squared quantum numbers. Well, now I'm saying I fix these eigenvalues. So now my states are not in the space. So each of these objects has two eigenvalues, plus one and minus one. So that's why the total dimension is 2 to the L squared, 2 to the 2L squared. But I fix these numbers to be plus 1 after the projection. So my Hilbert space is tanned after the projection only by these quantum numbers. So they are L squared plus 1. Okay, so we said the dimension of H gauge is 2 to the L squared minus 1. Not plus 1. Okay, so basically, now we want to find the basis in here, which means what are the chi's? It's exactly this. What are the other quantum numbers? Because the G are the quantum numbers in H total. In H total, you have the G and the chi. But when you project, you freeze the G. So the G cannot be changed anymore. Because by definition, H gauge is the set of states such that the G has eigenvalue plus one. So we're frozen forever. And we are saying this is the physical hyperspace. states that do not have that property are not physical. So what are the kinds? What is a basis in H gauge? And then we just showed that the spin basis, the computational basis, is not a good basis because it's not a gauge invariant. So we need new quantum numbers. So these new quantum numbers, let me call them B, must be gauge invariant. Right? Otherwise, they are not operators that act on H gauge. They must be such that B on H gauge is still H gauge. Remember when yesterday we said, oh, they are Hamiltonian. Must be Hamiltonian that commutes with the gauge structure. Otherwise, it's not Hamiltonian on the Hilbert space. This is exactly the same thing. So this means that B, all the B, let me label them by P, must commute with all the GN. So we need to find some gauge invariant point. Before I show you what are the gauge invariant quantities, so what is this gauge structure called? This gauge structure is called the Z2, because for every n, I have a representation of the two-dimensional group. So this is a representation of Z2. Right, there is the identity and then Gn, and this is a group, because Gn squared is the identity. So there's nothing else I can do. And Gn is also its inverse, because it squares the identity. So this is the Z2 quantum gauge structure. OK, let's find what are the other gauge invariant quantities. So how do we do that? Has any of you ever heard about Wilson loops? So what are Wilson loops?
They're like to compare the point, and like when we have the gauge transformation for at different point, like we want to compare the how gauge transformation acts on different points. So I have this comparator, and if I integrate over the closed loop over this comparator, it gives gauge invariant quantity.
Very good. Exactly. So, gauge theories, when you have some space, so it makes sense to say what is a loop, are always built in a way that loops are always gauge invariant quantities. So, let's try some non trivial gauge invariant quantities. So, let me draw a loop on the lattice. Because we have some trivial gauge invariant quantities that are all the operators that I can deal with the sigma x. So every operator that I can deal with sigma x commutes with Gn, right? So if I want to write a theory that is a gauge theory, now on this Hilbert space, I could write a Hamiltonian that is something like this. For this, I can use the sigma x, right? I can use the sum of sigma x I sigma x j h plus j, and maybe this. Okay, or any of the combination of the sigma x. So this would be gauge invariant. However, I am doing all this for nothing, because this is a classical theory, right? Because they all commit. So we need something that is not gauge invariant. something that does not commute with sigma x, but that is gauging value. So what about the icing model? I put z here. Well, this doesn't work. Because, okay, this is a good quantum theory, but this is not a Hamiltonian on the gauge invariant Hilbert space, because this operator does not commute with the GN. You see? So, you know, if this is my GN, and I operate with sigma z on this link, and GN does x, 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 they will anti-commute. So it's not okay. So bottom line, we need to find some good operators that are non-trivial, so they are not made of sigma x, so that in the end we can write a non-trivial quantum Hamiltonian, but still has to commute with the gauge transformations. So what do? We draw a loop. And now look, I apply sigma z everywhere on the links of the loop. So I define my Wilson loop operators, and now let me put a label x here so that we remember that z. And the operator that we are using on this loop is sigma z. And this is defined upon a loop that I can call gamma. So wz of gamma is equal to the product over all the links that belong to gamma of sigma z. And notice that gn and wz of gamma commute. Do you see that? Let's see why. Because every time I operate with a gauge transformation, there are only two possibilities. Either this gauge transformation is away from the, then they commit, because they don't have supporting copy. But if it is intersecting the loop, for instance, I operate here, it intersects on an even number of skills. No matter whether it's here or it's on the corner, it always even number of spins. So x, x, z, z commute. Right? X, z and I commute, but x, x, z, z commute. So they commute. Okay, now we are ready to define a good Hamiltonian for our gauge theory. And so we can use any combination of the sigma x operator and the Wilson loops. So those would be all gauge theories. However, the one that we usually call the quantum lattice, Z2 lattice gauge theory, is one particular choice, which is the most local one. And we don't want operators that are too non-local. So we choose as a sigma x, just sigma x on every spin, and as wz, the smallest possible loops. What are the smallest possible loops? It's the brackets. Okay? So let me call bp, that's why I called them bp before, just this thing, the product of the spins that are along the bracket p. So p is labeling the brackets here. Sigma z. So, by the same token, this is also the commutator of bp gn. So they commute for every p and n as we want. So now my Hamiltonian can be written as minus u sum over bp minus h sum over l sigma x f. So this is the Hamiltonian of the quantum gauge theory. We were saying, oh, what is the basis in HPH? Right? So that's why we were starting defining these things. So these are good quantum numbers, because they commute with the gauge transformations, and they commute with each other. So they're all good quantum numbers. How many of them do we have? Well, we need, how many do we need? L squared plus 1. So to start with, we only have L squared of them. So we have a missing one. However, it's a bit worse, because the same type of global constraint that we have here, we also have it for the B piece. Exactly for the same reason, if you take the product of all the plaquettes on the lattice, right, every time they overlap, I will get N. So by the end, I close, you have the N. So they are not all independent. So these VPs are L squared minus 1 independent quantum numbers. So this means that if I use this as a basis, so if I say that my H gauge is the span of these states, BP1 up to BP L squared minus 1, right? Then I miss, I still need two quantum numbers to label a basis. So we have two quantum numbers missing. So they must be that given by two operators that commute with Gn for every n, that commute with all the BPs, that commute with each other, and they are independent from the BPs. So you see that it seems that Noether-Wilson loop. Okay, I'm running too fast. Of course, these BPs are just the sum of Wilson loops. So we may wonder, okay, maybe I can take this. This is another Wilson. However, as you can see, this is equal to the product of all these plaquettes. Because as we said, the integral cancels, and we just got this integral. So all the Wilson loops are not independent. You know, I cannot use this gamma, I cannot use this W gamma as another quantum number, because once I've fixed the value of all these eigenvalues, this eigenvalue is just the product of all of those, because this is made by product of some brackets. So it's not independent. So where do we find the missing quantum number? History, there are two quantum numbers missing. There must be there. That's the dimension of the Hilbert space, to the L squared plus one. So is it really true that every Wilson loop is made of the product of plaquettes? This Wilson loop is.
This Wilson loop and this Wilson loop.
Yeah, very good. You see, these Wilson loops are contractible. They are topologically trivial. But what about on the torus? So let me draw the lattice so that it's clear what I mean. What about this Wilson? So sigma z over all the spins, so which would be this one. Sigma z. Also this commutes with the Gn. Because the only thing that Gn cares about is whether this guy is closed or open. But it doesn't care if it's contractible or not. However, this is not contractible. But every time I have a product of BPs, it must be contractible. Because then I can annihilate by product of BPs. Well, so this one is not made of BPs. So, this eigenvalue is a new quantum number. And then you have another one like this. So these are kind one, okay? And for the sake of convenience, let me put Z so that we remember that we're in the Z basis, that these loops were made of Z operators.
Sorry, but still I'm not so sure why G of N come in with the Wilson loop. Because if I act on G of N at some point, like let's say this bucket and star overlap at the point.
Yeah.
And can we say that acting on star first and then bucket is equal to acting on bucket first and acting on star?
Well, do the calculation, but the answer is this. Okay. So let me call this spin 1 and this spin 2, okay? The other spins don't matter. So here we have x1, x2, x3, x4, okay? And here we have z1, z2, z whatever, 5, z6, okay? So our operators that we're trying to commute are, well, you see, those that have no overlap, I don't really need to consider them, everything commutes. So it's x1, x2, commutator with z1, z2. Well, this is 0. Can you see that? So I'll just do the exercise. Because x1, z1 anti-commutes and x2, z2 anti-commutes, so the problem is we'll give you the commutator and this. In other words, okay, to obtain this, I have to pass this through this and through this. So when I pass it through this, nothing happens because there are different spins. When I pass it, I get a minus. But then I have to do it also with this one, and I get again a minus, so that itself. And so this minus, that is zero. All right. Okay, so this is a basis. So you see that our Gauge-Riemann Hilbert space is the tensor product of L squared plus one spins, new spins, that are, what have they? Are the product of sigma z around the loops. Now, what is the product? You see, on links, it's like we have a field. It's a discrete field, very more, it's the simple field that you can have. It's a scalar field that is discrete, has only two values, plus one and minus one. But now I'm, so what is BP? It's the product of the value of this field along the bucket. So it's the circuitation of this field, which by the Stokes theorem is the flux. So we call this quantity the z-pool flux. In that this is the flux. Just by an analogy with electromagnetism. So our degrees of freedom are the fluxes. So for every plaquette, we need to know if there is a, we say there is a flux if the eigenvalue is minus one, and we say there is no flux if the eigenvalue is plus one. Why we say that? Because if u is greater than zero, you see that we get higher energy when bp is minus one. Because of this. So we associate energy to u, to this flux. But the local fluxes are not enough. There is also the big flux that is obtained by integrating the z to field around this loop. So we also have this big flux and this big flux here. And we are saying these are our physical degrees of freedom, the fluxes. However, it would seem that given our notion of space that we have defined with the lattice, this simple space is very strange, because okay, these are local quantities, but these are non-local quantities. So if you feel that the quantum lattice gauge theory is weird because it has a non-local Hilbert space, you are right. It is weird. You may wonder whether it is realized in nature. Okay, we have just defined the theory. We don't know if it is realized in nature. And I would say chances are that it's not.
Why do you say chi1 and chi2 be non-local? Like the way you define the local is like if the operator have a finite support, you say it is local and still have a finite support.
No, it's a scale with L. It's not order one. Finite means order one, not something that becomes infinite in the third polynomial.
Circulation of a field is the sum over a closed loop, right? Not a product. Right.
Oh, okay, okay. But yeah, but so in this case, the same thing because it's mod 2. Because in the end, this sum can only be.
Yeah, okay.
I could decide that my field is e to the sigma z. Okay. Okay. So it is strange. So we will need at some point, you know, to make this a physical theory instead of a mathematical game. Right now it's more like a mathematical game. However, we are not finished yet. Now that we have a Hamiltonian, okay, so this is the lattice Z2 quantum gauge theory. And now that we have a Hamiltonian, we can start studying this model in the way we studied the IC model and other things, and see if it's the same stuff, it's very different. So let's look at the ground state. Ground state of my HZ2. And again, we want to do it in two limits. In the limit, U being much larger than H, and H being much larger than U. Well, this limit, let's do it first because we know it very well. It's the Boring parameter. And ground state is unique. And correlation functions, now we know, because there is a gap, right? In this Hamiltonian, decay in this way. And now let's look at this limit. So let me take h equals 0. First of all, so we don't know how to call it. Okay. It's a paramagnet or it's a ferromagnet? Well, we need to see if there is a residual magnetization. So what do we do? We need to see what is the expectation value in the ground state of some magnetization, right? Like sigma I, and now you tell me in what direction I have to measure magnetization? Huh? Loud. In the x direction, right? Or actually, sorry, no, not in x direction, sorry, because x is our external field, in the z direction. In the z direction. Okay. So let's see if there is a magnetization. So my magnetization is the sum of these guys over 12 squared. So this positive on the board. This is what is important. here I have sigma z. So this is the ground state of our theory.
For the Hamiltonian HZ2, does it include chi1, chi2?
No. Because as we said, our recipe is that we want to make the Hamiltonian as local as possible. So chi1 and chi2 are already bad on their own because they're in the Hilbert space. Okay. So let's keep the Hamiltonian as local as possible. Okay, so this is the ground state. So it is, in particular, it's a state of our gauge invariant Hilbert space, right? So this means that for every n, gn 0, 0. Right? So I can put gn here and gn here. And by now we have seen that gn dagger is gn, right? Because it's made the product of sigma x. So look, the average doesn't matter. I can do the average after. Okay, now imagine the type. So this is true for every n. So I can choose n as I want. So let me pick the n such that this I belongs to n. Okay? So you see, when I, if I want to pass this on the other side, they are type of mu. Right? Because gen is made of sigma x, sigma z, they must be type of mu. So this is equal to minus 0 sigma z I gn square 0. This is the identity. So this expectation value is equal to its opposite, so it's 0. So there is no spontaneous magnetization. So in some sense, it's a paramagnet, right? But it's what we call paramagnet. At that time, we didn't know any better. So for us, are all paramagnets. Okay. This is a paramagnet, this is a paramagnet. So they seem two very boring faces. However, who invented this theory, that was Wegener in 73, I think, noticed that in spite of being the, you know, in spite of the fact that these two faces are the same face, according to Wegener, because they are both paramagnets, however, there is a phase transition. Okay, so that there is a phase transition, but it's between two same phases, apparently. So why? How do we know that there is a phase transition? Well, I will show you in a minute. Fact is that now we know more than Wegener, so this is not a paramagnet, because now we see that there are those chis. And as you notice, those chis are not in the Hamiltonian. So let's look at this ground state. So how do I find the ground state of this for u much greater than h, in the limit of h going to 0? Well, in the limit of h going to 0, the Hamiltonian is just the sum of the BPs. Every time I have no flux, I have energy minus u. Every time I have a flux, I have energy plus u. So the ground state, 0, is the state where all the BPs are 1. If all the BPs are 1, the energy is minimized. It's easy to, I can satisfy all these constraints independently because they are commute. So that's the ground state. So there are no fluxes. However, look, so what about chi1 and chi2? Well, I can still choose chi1 and chi2 any way I want. Plus or minus 1. So the ground state is fourfold the degenerate. Okay, so this is not a boring paramagnet because the GS has a fourfold degenerate. So there must be a quantum phase transition in between, because otherwise you cannot change the degenerate. Right? Some gap is closing. And now this is weird, because now we have a degeneracy without symmetry breaking. Because there is, if we had symmetry breaking, then we would have a spontaneous magnetization. Moreover, if you now compute correlation functions at the distance, exactly by the same argument, they are exactly zero, at least in this limit of h is equal to zero. And tomorrow, or in the tutorial, I don't remember, we will show that for imperturbation theory, for small h, instead of being exactly zero, they decay exponentially. So this is the new thing we were looking for. We have a degenerate ground state with no symmetry breaking and exponential decay of correlation functions. So this is a new kind of order, because that's a completely different behavior of the correlation functions. So this is a new kind of order. And how do we call it? Well, you see, this degeneracy is 4, because we have two quantum numbers. Now imagine that I do the same construction. I cannot do it exactly in the square lattice, but that doesn't matter. The fact that there are plaquettes made of 4 doesn't matter. I could do it on a honeycomb lattice, I could do it on every lattice. Imagine that now I do it on a sphere. Now all the loops would be contractible, right? So I would have enough degrees of freedom to label everything. So the degeneracy would be 1. And what if I do the same construction on something with 2 handles? Well, now how many non-contractible loops I have? 1, 2, 3, 4. So my degeneracy now is 16 to the 4. So the degeneracy, so the dimension of the ground state is equal to 2 to the 2g, where this is the genus of the Riemann surface.
Is the loop, what is it, passing through, I mean, loop containing 2 holes, is identified, it's not identified as a...
It's not independent from this other 4.
Okay.
You can make it by using plaquettes and the other 4. These 4 are the independent ones. So because this degeneracy, that is the new structure that we have, degeneracy without symmetry breaking, is of topological origin, in fact, it depends explicitly on topology. This new kind of order we call it topological. Okay, so now we have several tasks. So this is very exciting. This is a new kind of order. So now we have 2 tasks. First of all, before dwelling further and deeper in what are all the properties of topological order, because there is much more to it than just this, which is already a big thing. So we have finally found a completely different organization and structure of correlation functions. So we want to see the consequences of this. But before we do that, we need to find a way to make this theory a bit more physical. Because you see, all started from this gauge structure that seems completely artificial. you know, the spins are physical, right? How, why only the states such that the g psi is equal to psi should be physical? This is really completely artificial. So we need some trick to turn this into a physical theory. And we see it on the